Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Dr. Pettis Perry. How are you today, Pettis?
A lot of static on the line. I don't know if you're hearing it down on the station as well.
So, Alberto, do we have you?
Yes, I'm on, but I am getting an echo, and I can hear you softly, but I hear him very clearly.
Pettis, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Jill?
Yes, I can hear. It's kind of staticky. You still hear that static?
Yeah, I've got lots of static.
Got lots of static. Oh, I'm so sorry. Alberto, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey!
I hear you faintly, but I'm here.
Oh, you sound so good. Yes, you hear the static faintly, too. Well, thank you for your patience. Thank you, everyone. But they're working on it. The great Howard Feldstein, our program director, and our program engineer, Eliza James, are just working on this. So why don't we just get started and let them handle the background noise. Well, first of all, I'll just start over and say I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Dr. Pettis Perry. Pettis, how are you today, other than the static and rough start?
I really appreciate the music as the preface to the show.
You do?
And it's been a music weekend for me. I think I've told you that we have lots of live music where I live.
Yes, so you're in Bellingham, Washington, for those who don't know. Yes.
It's been a full weekend of listening to my friends play music, so it's all good.
Oh, lovely. Happy summer.
Yes, indeed.
Good.
I hope you're well as also.
I am. I'm just watching two panicked people and feeling sorry for them.
We'll let them know the static has stopped, at least in my headphones.
Okay,
so thank
Pettis
you.
Okay, says the static has stopped in his headphones. What about Alberto?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Oh, there's Alberto. We got you. Okay. So now on to our great guest and topic. Our program today is the Republican Party has abandoned America. Why? How do we do politics right when the Republican Party has abandoned America? The Republican Party has abandoned truth, science, women, girls, LGBTQ+ citizens, Black and Latin citizens, separation of church and state, voting, healthcare, unions, public education, childcare, higher education, minimum wage, environmental issues, equality, poor and middle class, COVID masks, vaccine, gun safety, fair elections, the climate crisis, and even democracy itself. How do we do American politics right when over the past 4+ decades, Republicans and some Democrats have subjected the American people to massive amounts of stress and levels of strain that could make our society crack? We have big things to do. Pettis, would you like to introduce our bold guest today?
It's my pleasure, Jill. Our interview guest today is Alberto Willis, who is a political activist, author, political blogger, radio show host, business owner, software developer, web designer, and mechanical engineer in Kingwood, Texas. He is the producer and host of a Pacific Network radio show and podcast called Politics Done Right. He is the author of several books, including It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors, and As I See It, Class Warfare, the Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. Alberto also writes for Medium and has his own YouTube channel. His favorite phrase is, political involvement should be a requirement for citizenship. He also believes that if a change in policy does not occur, the United States of America will be no different than any other oligarchic society where a few are able to accumulate wealth while the majority of us are left behind because it is mathematically impossible to catch up. Welcome to Be Bold America, Alberto.
Okay, now we can't hear Alberto.
There he is.
Okay, we couldn't hear you there for a second, so.
Right. Let me just before I preface the thanks for being on your program, let me tell you that I can't hear Jill very well, so I'm going to give some breaks to when she, I'll have to kind of make do with that. But thank you so kindly for having me on your program. I am elated to be with you, with both of you, to discuss all these issues.
Well, we're delighted to have you, Alberto. And I wanted to say, you sure helped me get through July 4th this year. I was having a hard time celebrating our country because it was so recent after the extreme court's decision on Roe. And when you said, celebrate the country you want it to be, that helped me a lot. So thank you for that.
Well, that's what I really believe, Jill. I think for myself as a progressive, I have to stop living through all the things that are not going right and actually try to make things right. In other words, I'm not going to live vicariously through the eyes of those complainers, but we are going to be the ones that I think must make the difference.
We have to support each other to keep our energy levels up too, because sometimes I feel pretty tired, you know, keeping at it. But if we stop, then the right wins. So to get started, you know, why don't you first tell us about yourself? Where are you from? What caused you to create, produce, and host a progressive national radio program and author several books? What motivates you? What floats your boat, Alberto?
Well, what floats my boat? I love the way you say that. What floats my boat? Well, first of all, I'm from a little country called Panama, Central America. And, you know, I always tell the story in the first book that I wrote called As I See It, Class Warfare, The Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. I always tell the story about my grandfather who migrated to the United States of America. I think it was in the 50s. And for the first time that I was going to meet him sometime in the 70s, I remember taking his shoes up and saying, looking at the sole of his shoes and said, imagine these shoes walked in America. That is the kind of rapport or revere that people have for America back in the other parts of the world before a whole lot of what's going on now has occurred. And then when I came to the United States, it was an awakening because while a lot was what I expected it to be, there was so much that I didn't expect it to be. And the same activism that I had back home as a young kid in high school, it kind of brewed up in at the University of Texas, where I went to school as well. And, you know, I was a closet activist for a long time while I worked for corporate America for 5 years and had my business, etc. But as soon as my daughter headed off to college, I said, okay, I can really be who I needed to be now.
So when was it that you came to the United States? How old were you, or what year was that? How long have you been here?
So as it turns out, I came in 79 when Carter, you know, the last few months of the Carter administration.
Ah.
And I always liked Carter, but I remember Reagan was a charismatic fellow. And henceforth, the beginning of my learning of the political system and the real differences between Republicans and Democrats.
Okay. Well, that is the beginning, I think, of the Reagan revolution or de-evolution. Pettis, how about a question?
Certainly. I have a couple of questions if we can get. I'll get one in now and then one after the break, if that's okay.
Okay.
Alberto, my first question is, you know, our title is, you know, has to do with the Republican Party abandoning America. Do you agree with that hypothesis? And if so, why?
Oh, absolutely. You know, first of all, I agree with when anybody who says the Republican Party has abandoned or is abandoning America, the America that we want to see. You see, what's happening right now, in my humble opinion, is that Republicans they love America as long as there is one sect of people, S-E-C-T of people, that are in control. As long as everybody else is subservient to what their belief is of what America is supposed to be. Now they feel themselves now acquiring equity with everybody else, or everybody's acquiring equity with them, and that to them is a loss. And they rather be anti-democratic to ensure that never occurs than to be democratic and lose the absolute power that they have. And that is, in effect, the destruction of America, because in as much as America was not created on democratic principles, in as much as America was created just for a few, we have used all the systems created by that few to protect the few, to protect the many. And that is what they cannot take.
they play a zero-sum game rather than understanding that there's plenty of room to make more pie. Jill, do you want to take a break here?
Yes, thank you. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD website. Our topic today is Republican Party has abandoned America. Why? And we're speaking with Egberto Willis, who is a political activist, author, political blogger, and radio show host. Learn more by visiting politicsdoneright.com or egbertowillis.com. That's EGBERTOWILLIES.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Well, Eliza's still working on getting our promo. Well, let's get back. We'll skip it because she's having a tough time finding it. So that was our break, Pettis.
Okay, so let me ask another question.
Yes, go for it.
Let me apologize to our audience for the issues we're having today. These have really been overwhelming for all of us. But Egberto, you're in Texas, as I understand it, and Jill alerted me to something, and I looked it up, and it appears that a group of Texas educators proposed to the State Board of Education that slavery should be taught as involuntary relocation during second grade social studies instruction. And it's a good thing that their board pushed it back and said, no, you're going to have to work on this more. But what really got to me was the whole idea of continuing to reduce the aggravated assault on Africa and what it did to the people that were enslaved here in the U.S. So would you mind talking a little bit about if you've heard that report? It was in the Texas Tribune back in June. But if you've heard about that or if you've heard any more movement on such an idea and what's coming out of Texas, because I think Texas in a lot of ways is a bellwether state in terms of what's going to be the next shoe that falls that we're going to have to fight.
Yes, I've heard about it. Not only have I heard about it, this isn't the first time that there was an attempt to do this. They wanted to call us involuntary visitors. They've tried all kinds of things inside of some of our textbooks. In fact, many times parents would read textbooks that have been approved that actually diminished exactly the how raw, how terrible, how violent slavery really was. The whole idea behind CRT, even though it's not taught in college, the whole idea behind CRT is because America over the years, especially since Reagan came into office, have been trying to sanitize our beginnings. Look, I don't want to talk out of line here, but we had the beginnings of America is not the beginnings that we were taught. I mean, we were taught about America that was a benevolent place, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That is only true for some, and it's not even true for most. It's not even true for most white people who are there defending the honor of our beginnings. Look, the great thing that the founding fathers did, and I call it really the only great thing, was to create a system that had a fairly organized way to change so that it could change for the better. But if we look, you know, people want me to say, oh, the founding fathers were great people. And then I have to remind them, well, they made a compromise on my humanity. How would you feel if your humanity was compromised? And we can go over and over and over. This is not something against white people. This is something against those who created our institutions and the systemic nature of our institution being not a fair system. And we're just trying to make it a fair system. So when they try to teach us that, well, my friend, those slaves that came, they're trying to sanitize the reality of who we were.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think until we get beyond the fear of our own history, we're not going to be able to move forward. You know, we need to deal with the genocide that happened both Africans, but also with Native Americans right. here in this country, and the dislocation of people, whether it was from Africa or from the eastern shores of the U.S. or the central parts of the U.S. To highly identified reservations that perpetuate a subsistence level of living, because the resources are lacking for people to have a better way of life. So, you know, I think that these are important things. And I agree with you. Nobody wants to go back. Nobody that I know anyway is blaming. What we're calling for is a recognition of the history. And just let's own it and let's move on from it.
Absolutely. And to own it, you have to understand, you know, I mean, I always tell somebody, you know, people always say, why can't you lift yourself up by the bootstrap? I say, you take $1,000 from me and give me $100 back and tell me to catch up. How can I ever catch you?
That's exactly right. You know, you got to have straps on the boot in right. order to lift yourself up by the bootstraps.
You have to own the boot, too.
That's true. Can't be rental property. Jill, back to you.
Thank you, Pettis. Well, just to add to what you were both discussing is that that's why the whole...
I can barely hear Jill, so you may have to...
Oh, you can barely hear me. Thank you for that input, Egberto. Is that those that talk about being originalists with the Constitution, you just mentioned, Egberto, that the Constitution needs to change for the better, and I think that that is a natural human desire, is to improve, to progress, to do best practices, and yet we have people in power that zip just want to go back to 242 years ago, you know, originalism. It's not, they don't want to go for the better. And I think another issue is we need new language in talking about the Republican Party. They are not the Republican Party now. They're a QAnon party, they're an anti-democratic party, but they don't stand for any conservative principles anymore. All of them that did stand for that have been driven out of the party. So now this so-called Republican Party, they're now extremists that are being infused with the GOP, and the GOP is now just off the spectrum and is an extremist force. Egberto, your thoughts?
I agree with absolutely everything that you said. After all, you know, Jill, you know, and they use it sometimes in their rhetoric, right? Remember, President Abraham Lincoln, he was a Republican and he signed the Emancipation Proclamation. True, true, true. But I always remind my Republican or so-called Republican friends in your parlance that also let's all remember that the Dixiecrats, the Democrats of the South, became the Republican Party. So therefore, we had a little switcheroo. But look, Jill, what you're saying is absolutely true. It's an extremist party. Not only is it an extremist party, but it's a party that depends on said extremism for success. Because absent that, given that they have very little to offer to the American citizenry, they don't have a choice but to do one of several things. And that is, one, you have to make... first of all, you have to look at the percentage of white people that are convincible that somehow a birthright that they never got or never had was being taken away from them by the other. And that is the nature of their extremism right now. The thing about it is this. I don't know, for those who listen to what we talk about here, is we try to let... you know, my audience, and as much as I am a black dude, my audience is, you know, predominantly white. And one of the things that I've always said is we have to put out there that nobody wants anybody's birthrights. Everybody wants equity. But guess what's the most important thing that people don't understand? Racism was a tool not to help most Americans, including not to help white Americans. It was a tool to empower and enrich a few. That's one of the reasons why women couldn't vote. Only 5% of men could vote back in the days. And we've been changing that. Now, in order to maintain a system, including an economic system, that aggrieves the most, we have to keep most people, I don't want to sound presumptuous, but not knowing very much.
Well, what also worries me, and I think you answered the why they have abandoned America, is because they're seem to be just afraid of the other, or a multicultural America, and so fear seems to be at the basis of a lot of it. But I'm worried about the so-called Republican Party wanting to transform the United States into an authoritarian state. And in modern times, that's done by evolution, not revolution, like the country of Hungary and Orban. Or even Russia, where there's the veneer of voting. But the voting is rigged. Putin gets 90% of the votes. I mean, that veneer lets people think they're still in some sort of democracy, and that's the evolution, is that they're not doing it violently and like a revolution would be, like we had our revolution against King George III. But this evolution, which is makes us more feel like that frog in the pot, you know, warming up.
Yes.
And people don't realize that all of a sudden, bam, we could be living in an authoritarian state and have lost our democracy.
Jill, that is their only survival, for us to become an authoritarian state. An unchanged Republican Party that does not support the policies that most Americans want. They haven't won a majority in the vote for the presidency in 18 years. They have not won the majority of the vote for Congress or the Senate in decades. The only solution they have is an authoritarian regime. Unfortunately, the way the Constitution was built make it very easy, if we take our eyes off of the ball, to accomplish that. That is why programs like yours, a program like yours is so important, because you have the pedigree to be able to reach a different subset of America that would be amenable to the message, that is not flavored by what you hear, let's say, on Fox News, Newsmax, or OAN.
Well, thank you for that lovely comment, and that was very nice. Well, Dr. Ruth Ben-Gayat talks about, she's an authority on authoritarianism, and she's just said that in authoritarian states, the range of targets never shrink, they always increase. So right now they're going after women. Next is going to be, they started with trans citizens and also now women and LGBTQ, and it goes on and on and on from there. It never shrinks. So it gets to the point where you just have the total control or takeover of the state of this one group, and it could be done by violent means like January 6th, and that to me is a neo-fascist state. And I see that as a real possibility. And a couple minutes before our Hightower break, you have thoughts on that, Egberto?
Yeah, quick one. And that is this is where, again, Jill, your voice has to be important. And notice I didn't say it's important, but I said has to be important. And what I mean by that is I am a man. I can talk about what they're doing to women's rights, etc., but I'm just a man. As a woman who understands the issues and who can better relate to these issues with women, even women on the right, we have to get the message in that you have out there, things that you have fought for all of your life, into their mindset, because the mindset that they've been inculcated with now, indoctrinated with right now, is one that hurts them, and they don't know they're being hurt. And it's not that they're silly, it's just that's how indoctrination works. And that's why your voice, again, is so important.
Thank you so much, Egberto. If you are just joining us, our topic is the Republican Party has abandoned America. Why? And we're speaking with Egberto Willis, who is a political activist, author, political blogger, and radio show host. Learn more by visiting politicsdoneright.com. Pettis and I would like to add you, dear listener, to our news group, and you may do so by texting Be Bold America at 22828. Text Be Bold America at 22828. Help us grow our list, and if you've signed up already, thank you. You are now receiving advance knowledge on upcoming shows' guests. We will be back with our bold guest, Egberto Willis, right after Jim Hightower explains how corporate elites have already chosen their favorites for president in his commentary titled, "Shh, the Governor is Listening." I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Haven't even gotten through this year's midterm congressional elections, it's still not too early to start examining some of the characters who hope you will make them president in 2024. I know you don't want to, but we must. That's because corporate elites have already chosen their favorites, and they intend to use massive sums of money, lies, more money, PR slick'em, and even more money to slide their toady into the Oval Office, hoping you don't discover until it's too late that their chosen one really is a toad. Take Ron DeSantis. The GOP's far-right, power-hungry, narcissistic Florida governor promises to be the next Donald Trump, only more effective and not as nice. For example, his favorite gubernatorial hobby is the Orwellian practice of monitoring and censoring people's speech and thoughts, culling out ideas he deems objectionable. "Don't say gay" is his most infamous dictate to the state's teachers, but he has also outlawed any teachings that might, quote, denigrate the founding fathers. Nor will he tolerate the study of institutional racism in America. Indeed, he has even mandated that social studies textbooks, get this, must not include concepts of social justice. Ron adamantly opposes what right-wingers call a woke society. He wants one that's asleep, sound asleep. He recently rallied his right-wing cadre to ban some math textbooks. Yes, math. They screech that some real-life topics like wage disparities are being used to make math problems relevant to today's students. So it was Fahrenheit 451 for those books. Thus far, DeSantis' censorship binge has nixed 42 math books for, quote, incorporating prohibited topics. This is Jim Hightower saying, did I mention that DeSantis is also forming his own gubernatorial military force? A state army he can deploy in emergencies. What's an emergency? He says he'll decide. Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today is the Republican Party has abandoned America. Why? And we're speaking with Egberto Willis, who is a political activist, author, political blogger, radio show host, and author of It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors. Learn more by visiting politicsdoneright.com. Pettis, let me toss it over to you. Have a question?
Thanks, Jill. I do. Egberto, I'd like to talk a little bit about your book, As I See It, Class Warfare, The Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. You know, my dad used to tell us that race is a distraction that's used to divide people and actually does what you and Jill were talking about creating other, you know, the people that become the target. It's also just really a social construct that we've made up as a form of convenience and actually doesn't exist in nature. You know, it's what Jane Elliott reminded us. There's only one race, which is the human race. So the issue, as he would always talk about it, my father, was class warfare. So I'd be interested in your thoughts and what you were talking about in your book about class warfare.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, my thoughts are, you know, I don't think they're all, I think a lot of people see this deep on the inside. You think about when you're growing up and you meet people and you're just talking to folks, everybody loves each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then we get into certain constructs, as you were mentioning, social construct as race is, and suddenly we find a way to abstract ourselves. I don't remember the name of the woman right now that did the blue eye, brown eye test.
That was Jane Elliott.
Right. She was. Exactly. We had the honor to interview her last year.
Excellent. Well, you know, that was always intriguing to me, how people started to act down to what they thought society expected of them. And you know who knew that? the powers that created our economic system, the powers that created our governments, they all understood that this isn't something new. So if you take a look at what we have here, and, you know, I've always spoke about capitalism, the necessity of having slavery to have capitalism, right? Because you have to have people that are willing to produce where you continue to get a large share of their output. So I get a lot of flack for saying that because, you know, in America, you don't speak up against these issues, but I don't speak about it in some way to destroy our economy. I speak about it to enhance our economy, to make a better economy. Let me explain. And with respect to, as I see it, class warfare, the only resort to right-wing doom. We use race to alienate people. If we can alienate people by race, we can split the pie differently. We can keep people fighting against each other when those on the top, the ones that are controlling the economic system, can get away with what they're doing. I always talk about it being, what we have now is something called antiseptic slavery. It's a bit worse than indentured servitude because you don't even know that it's happening, right? I gave a little commentary about when you were a slave, and please don't take this wrong. And for the listeners that, you know, that, or sometimes get sensitive about an issue like this, but this is just an antiseptic. When the master had a slave, that slave had to be clothed, that slave had to be fed, that slave had to be kept healthy because it was a means of production. It was capital necessary to produce. So therefore, you had to maintain it. As capitalism evolved, where we didn't want to have the scourge of slavery, the whip, the pain, the blood, all that kind of stuff to maintain this, we had a different kind now. We now hire you. But guess what? In hiring you, when you are no use to us, we can fire you without losing a capital investment, right? We no longer need you. So having some people believe that they are above others worked for a while, but right now we are working within a system that says, we keep those divisions so that you can fight among yourselves, but at the same time, everybody, irrespective of quote-unquote race, are nothing more than antiseptic slaves to the system. It may be a bit convoluted that I've tried to wrap up what I talk about for a whole hour and 5 minutes, but I'm sorry.
No, I think it was clear to me. In real terms, organizations spend somewhere between 60 and 75 to 80% of their budget on payroll. Mm-hmm. And so the contest is always, how do you minimize the cost of your payroll so that you can maximize profits? And that's why wages are low, right? Because the idea is to maximize profits for shareholders in particular, or owners of companies, at the expense of dividing the profits with those with whom you work. Now, there are companies that have profit sharing, but most of the for-profit companies, if they have any sort of redistribution of wealth, is done through bonuses, which are tied to metrics that are short-term and can really be manipulated by managers. And that's why you see so many failures. And then we turn around and even bonus failure. People have gotten $25, $30 million golden handshakes, mm-hmm. even when they failed.
Right.
So the people at the top get rewarded for failure, and the people lower in the organization take the hit by losing their jobs or not being able to take a step up by earning more income.
Pettis, if you allow me to 2 minutes, I want to say something because you just said something extraordinarily important. This is something that I said on Friday, right? You know, everybody's talking about inflation right now and a supply chain problem. Supply chain problem causing inflation, and the Russian oil caused inflation. I was on Muslim TV a couple of weeks ago to dispel that. First of all, there's not an oil shortage. And secondly, the supply chain problem is not some, it is actually corporate sector made. Let me say it real quickly now. I explained on recently the following. We decided, corporations decided, that they wanted to offshore our workers, irrespective of everything, they wanted to offshore our workers. After they offshored our workers, that meant that they had to have a constant supply of ships coming in to shore with the supplies. They then created something called JITI, just-in-time inventory, which said, hey, we don't want to maintain a strong inventory because it costs us money to have products there that's not going to be sold. So we created just-in-time inventory. We get the things flowing in as we need it. Then we don't want to pay taxes to mitigate things, these corporations, to mitigate pandemics, to mitigate climate change or anything. So the first time we have a pandemic, we have any one of these issues, and because all our products are offshored, it creates a supply chain problem. And guess who pays for the supply chain problem that they created out of their greed? We do, because we pay more in something called inflation as a way to increase the prices. And they make more money because they're selling less good for more for a problem that they created. When it comes to oil, the same thing is similar. There's actually a glut because Russia is selling oil to cheap into India and China. So there's not a net loss of oil on the market as they would want you to believe on TV. And likewise, refineries are being shut down just to keep gas prices up. But they don't tell you that on mainstream media.
Absolutely not, because then we would begin to see the problem in a different way. Jill?
Yes, well, just to shift the topic for a couple minutes till our next break, and that is, I wanted to talk to you, Egberto, about the religious right, or the separation of church and state, because this has me very worried. I just finished Ken Burns's special documentary on Ben Franklin, and one of the quotes of Ben Franklin that stuck with me was, "A virtuous heretic shall be saved before a wicked Christian." And, you know, I think the myth out there is that this was started as a Christian nation, when in fact it was the opposite. Their intention was to have church and state totally separate from each other, protect both. Amy Coney Barrett, who was a handmaiden in the very cult that used that term. And then we have others that are part of Opus Dei on the court. And so what, to me, we've got this authoritarian state, but it's also people working towards a theocracy as well. Your thoughts?
Wow. You know, it's funny. Marcus Melitzes, the founder of Daily Kos, the largest liberal site in the country, wrote a book called The American Taliban. And I remember when I reviewed that book, I was in awe, because it was like he foresaw how deep we would get. He got a lot of flack for writing the book The American Taliban. And it was ironic because as I did my show, one of the callers said, hey, doesn't this remind you of the Taliban, which is pretty much the theocracy that you just explained, Jill. As far as our founders, look, you know, I always found it amazing that the creators of our documents always simply, just like they have used race as a tool, they have used religion as a tool. And there was an alliance made between Reagan, the right wing, and the corporatocracy back in 1979. It is still holding today. And that unholy alliance, that unholy triad, is one of the reasons we're right where we are, Ms. Jill.
Yes. Well, you know, I think it was Franklin Roosevelt that also said, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that a necessitous man or woman is not a free man or woman. And if you have your religion or your freedom of religion taken away, or your freedom of speech taken away, and we're hanging on with a thread with the freedom of the press and assembly and the right to petition, I'm very worried about people who talk about freedom and liberty taking it all away. And it really comes down to freedom and liberty for who?
Ah, that's the magic. Freedom and liberty for who? I tell you what, Jill, what I believe. I believe that these guys have gone a bit too far. I think that the news media is behind the curve in what American sphere. I mean, if you take a look at, let's look at you. Several times in our discussion here, you said, I fear that, I fear that, mm-hmm. I fear that. What is one of the biggest motivators for anybody vote in on any particular issue? It is more powerful than, it's more powerful than just truth, mm-hmm. fear.
And I guess it's fear that, you know, that is going to hurt someone, hurt people, hurt our country, you know, destructive. And that's, you know, I'd rather build and improve the country, build communities. Well, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Egberto Willis, who is political activist, author, political blogger, radio show host. Learn more by visiting EgbertoWillis.com and PoliticsDoneRight.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Join K-Squid today at 6 p.m. for Reflections on Buddhism. The United States holds the ideal of a pluralistic democracy with protections for every citizen and freedom from religious tyranny. This promise is being undermined by a minority intent on superimposing its own moral values on the wider population, with recent reversals of hard-won civil rights. Join Buddhist nun Venerable Tenzin to learn how we might foster understanding and compassion in an increasingly polarized civic climate by recognizing the common humanity of our fellow citizens. That's Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. on 90.7 FM K-Squid. Many voices, one station.
And that's right after our show. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQ 90.7 FM, Many Voices, One Station. Want a friend to hear this interview? Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you and your friends may listen from your favorite podcast platforms such as Apple, Google, Spotify, Radio Public, and many more. Subscribe for free. And also, I'm very proud to say we have listeners around the world in a variety of different countries. So thank you to those listeners as well as those in the United States. So I wanted to talk a couple minutes, Egberto, about Rick Scott's 11-point plan. I don't think this gets enough coverage. And I know that a reporter asked Mitch McConnell, what are their plans and policies for if they took over the House of Representatives and the Senate? And he said, well, we'll tell you after we've done that. You know, but then Rick Scott came out with an amazing plan that tells you exactly what they're going to do. And of course, one of the most scary ones is just, you know, limit Social Security for 5 years and Medicare for 5 years, and it would always have to re-up. But there's many more plans that the GOP has in Rick Scott's 11-point plan. What are your, you've looked at that, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, let me first tell you that I'm glad you made that observation, and that is, I want you to think about the reverse. Think about if Democrats had released a plan saying, we are going to review Social Security every 5 years. We are going to review Medicare every 5 years. We are going to review absolutely every entitlement that we offer as a government every 5 years to determine its viability.
Head Start, school lunch programs, on and on and on. Yes.
Right. If it were the Democrats that did that, the Republicans would have ads ad nauseam all over. We don't. I tell you what, I saw my first real ad on a major network, CNN, that mentioned it without stating that it was a policy written. In other words, what I'm saying is I don't understand why that document isn't the Bible for Democrats' reelection.
I don't either. Very good observation, Egberto.
I mean, it is the thing about it is this, right? The draconian nature of that document. I mean, that Rick Scott, and Rick Scott is not a dumb person. Now, he's a crook.
Yes.
He's a crook. His company stole a lot of money from Medicare.
Built Medicare, and then went in Congress, had to claim the fifth 75 times, and yet he was governor and then now a senator. It's just remarkable.
Yeah. So the thing about it is he knows how to talk to his people. But here's what I would have done, what I am doing, and what I'm sure you are going to do with your program as well, is triangulate them, because that opens the door to their own people. Because unlike what Republicans never tell you is they like to run on ideological issues, and it's easy, right? You can run an abortion for the ideologues that are evangelical people. You can run on the theoretical small government if you are able to cater it that says those other people are getting all these governmental benefits. It's easy to do that. But when it's going to touch your pocketbook, if I were Democrats, I would go into Appalachia, and Appalachia goes from New York all the way down to Alabama. I would go into Appalachia, the people that are most dependent on government services that don't know it. I would go to Kentucky. I would go to all these places and concentrate in Kentucky. You vote for this guy, you're losing your this. You vote, and then you put them on the spot. You let them say, we are not for government subsidy, or we are for government. You force them to say, we are for government subsidies. Most of them can't get that out of their mouths, even though they get subsidized more than anybody else. All the red states are what I call beggar states. They take more from the government than they take in. All the states that they talk about, Connecticut, New York, all New Jersey, they all put much more money into the federal coffers.
California. Yeah, California. That's right.
You know, so it is sad to me that these types of arguments, these types of debates, that the Democrats don't take it to them. Your people are sicker. If you want to measure ideology, let's measure the health of your people. Let's measure education level of your people. Let's measure all these things and see where you land on the scale.
Like life expectancy and
right.
Mothers dying in birth. And, there's so many. And they could use the actual words of the Republicans. It seems so easy to just take what they've said and replay it. Well, we also at this point like to take a few minutes, Egberto, to ask our guests what advice they have or what suggestions they have for us. So what can we keep doing, stop doing, start doing, in your view, to restore our democracy, to participate further than voting? What are your ideas to get people's fire in their belly ignited?
You're gonna think I'm corny, okay? But when I wrote my book, It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relative Friends and Neighbors, it wasn't sort of look at that talk. I was very serious because I live in a very red area, in a very red state, in a fairly blue county, but I am in a very red area, okay? And my neighbors, we get along fine, and they know I'm this left-wing, and I'm talking one of the most left-wing progressive liberals, right? I think what the suggestions that I give to people is not to understand, if you had a sick relative, let's say, and I say this with respect, but a relative that had some sort of a mental illness that didn't allow them to rationalize correctly, you wouldn't hate on them. You wouldn't do all these things. You'd love on them, right? You'd actually try to be positive with them and try to inch them to the right place. I think what we have to do, I think we don't do it right, many progressives, is that a lot of times, even though we are right, don't get me wrong, we are right. There's no doubt about it. Mathematically and every way, we are right. But you can't tell somebody that just that way. You have to let them come to that realization under their terms. And that is what we try to do, sometimes successful, actually most times successfully, even if we have to do it over and over again. But we have to get them to come to, you have to get them to come drink the water. And you do that by trying to see where they are and trying to talk to them, do a lot of listening, and then allowing them to get there.
Well, one thought I had is that we should have some kind of World Us Day, you know, where we see the world as us for even one day instead of it all about me versus you or us versus mm-hmm. them. But now that we see that we're one species and that we each need each other to survive, there's no us versus them. There is only us. What am I trying to say? Interaction.
Guess what,
shift
Jill?
From me, and mine to us, and feel the shift in the heart.
You just said it. You just started it. You just started it.
I just started it. Yay!
Yeah.
We need to start a World Us Day, because I think if just people think about one day to change their mindset for one day and think of us and think of facts, patience, and respect, we might have a chance to bring this country together. And that's one purpose of our program, Egberto, and I know yours too, is trying to bring America back. It's been 40 years of dividing. Division is really coming to fruition, and we need to fight for bringing Americans back together. Egberto Pettis and I are so grateful that you could join us on Be Bold America. Thank you for all you do to preserve our democracy and create social justice for all, and being our bold and impressive guest today. Keep up the great work.
It's been my honor to be with both you and Jill and Pettis.
Well, and you know, we barely got through all of our questions. I apologize again for our rough start. This is live radio, and so we just go with the flow. And so I apologize to our listeners and to you too, Egberto, but we got rolling there. And so I just wanted to tell you how much we value you. So thank you.
Thank you so kindly, and both valued, and I really appreciate having the honor to be on your program.
Our pleasure. What's coming up next on Be Bold America on Sunday, July 31st? Pettis and I will be speaking with constitutional law professor Margaret Russell Esquire. Professor Russell is with the Santa Clara University School of Law. She will help us understand the constitutional reasoning and implications of the Supreme Court's Dobbs versus Jackson decision, the reasoning of stare decisis, and what Clarence Thomas' concurring opinion means as a clue towards what the court will do next. As Dr. Ruth Ben-Gayat states, authoritarians never complete their range of targets, so we must be informed on what the Supreme Court is planning ahead. Our future depends on it. So join us on Sunday, July 31st at 5 p.m. to hear not from a TV spin doctor, but a constitutional law professor on the cascade of consequences that will result from the Dobbs versus Jackson decision. Remember, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you may listen to the show anytime for free by searching for Be Bold America on your favorite podcast platform. I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer, Eliza James. Thank you, Eliza. You had the yeoman's work today. And the station's program director, Howard Feldstein. And again, to our bold friend, Egberto Willis. Remember, visit politicsdoneright.com. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Reflections on Buddhism with the Venerable Tenzin. My name is Jill Cody.
And I'm Dr. Pettis Perry.
Thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.